to the United States now, and we welcome correspondent Ron Elving. Good morning, Ron.
Good to be with you, Catherine.
Ron is, of course, with NPR, where he is senior editor and correspondent, Washington desk for NPR News. Well, it happened, but even though it had been expected, still shock and very strong reaction and, dare I say it, polarisation over the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade.
Indeed, and you can only imagine what there would be in New Zealand if there were a similar move to push everything back to where you were 50 years ago, not just back before the abortion legislation of 2020, but back to decriminalization in the early 1970s. That's where we are. We have 13 of our 50 states now that have banned abortion totally and that have rather severe criminal strictures against anyone who performs an abortion, even a medical procedure. And in some cases, they do not even grant exceptions for rape and incest, or for that matter, to save the life of the mother, although some of them do grant that particular exception. So this is an extraordinary reversal of 50 years of social change, and it is roiling the country as few things have in my lifetime.
What are the questions that people have right now about their access to abortion, whether it is in-state or across state? What is known as a result of this decision? Because I think some states have already moved very quickly in its wake.
That's right. 13 states have already done so, and many of these were what we call trigger laws. They'd been passed and put on the books years ago in case Roe versus Wade, which was the Supreme Court case 50 years ago, literally 1973, 49 years ago, that legalized abortion in all 50 states. That came as a surprise at that time. The court seemed to be rather out ahead of many people in the country. And now the court seems to be lagging far behind where the country has progressed to over the ensuing 50 years. This is a terribly unpopular decision. Even people who have reservations about abortion think this particular decision is disproportionate, that it's out of line, and that it is draconian in many respects. And in many of these states, I mentioned 13, but there are a number of other states, probably a little more than half of the total of 50 states, where there are laws that will take effect quite soon. So it appears that something like 27 or 28 of the 50 states will have either old laws that came back into effect or recently passed laws in case Roe should be overturned.
We did discuss last time, I think, that the revered liberal justice on the Supreme Court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, had herself expressed reservations about whether the Supreme Court was the place to deal with this issue's legality or whether it should have been done legislatively. And has there been a missed opportunity, in inverted commas, for those wanting to secure and enshrine the right to an abortion to do so legislatively over the course of these 50 years?
There has not been a point, to my knowledge, and I have been following it through all 50 years, I must confess, that there has not been a point when there were the votes in the United States Senate to overcome a filibuster and legally make it a federal law that would be applicable in all 50 states. Now, there have been many times when the House could have done it. The House could do it right now. But the Senate needs a supermajority to overcome a filibuster. And even when the Democrats had as many as 60 votes in the Senate very briefly, early in the administration of Barack Obama, they did not have that many votes for this purpose, for the purpose of legislating a Roe versus Wade guarantee in all 50 states. So while the Democrats have a nominal majority in the Senate, that is not enough to pass legislation of this kind, not on this particular issue.
Explain more about the filibuster, and second, the calls there have been, although rejected, including by Ruth Bader Ginsburg before her death, to pack the court, to add more justices and thereby balance out their perceived conservatism or liberalism.
Our Constitution does not set a number of Supreme Court justices. It leaves that up to Congress, and the number has varied a little over a long period of time. But for more than a century, it has been set at 9, and that number has come to have a certain significance in and of itself. Conservatives have been loath to change it, and even liberals, as you say, such as Ruth Bader Ginsburg, have felt that it would not be a good thing to just raise and lower that number willy-nilly, depending on the exigencies of a particular moment, the mood of the electorate in a particular moment. So this decision is going to put pressure on that devotion to the number nine if the Democrats, or for that matter, later on, maybe the Republicans, should become concerned that the court is going against them, and they may want to pack the court with new judges that they appointed. They may want to change that number as well, but as we have it right now, they're going to have to do that by getting a supermajority of the Senate, 3/5 of the Senate, to go along with that idea. And it's extremely difficult, given the politics of our country and the politics that we have seen over the last 50 years, to imagine either party having that kind of supermajority to accomplish that in the foreseeable future.
Is abortion a standout issue for conservative, and particularly for religious conservative Republicans? Or, as some are flagging, is there a risk that other so-called social legislation, personal rights legislation, might now be challenged?
There is such a risk, and it seems quite explicit in the opinions that have been written by some of the Supreme Court justices in this particular case, suggesting that the same reasoning could be used to overturn decisions in favor of same-sex marriage, for decisions in favor of contraception, and for even decisions that go back to issues such as the legality of interracial marriage, which was banned in many states until as recently as the 1960s. So, let us say that there is a lively debate right now as to whether or not any of the social progressive changes of the last 50 years is safe at this point. It would seem that abortion is number one, that there is more of a consensus on the right that this, because it involves a fetus, because it involves a potential human life, is a special case, a unique case, unlike all those other issues.
Let's talk about a last-minute addition to the January 6th committee, which, as I've told you, I've been following with some regularity some of those earlier appearances. What is it that's been added as a last-minute session?
We suddenly have been told, just this afternoon, that on Tuesday, the committee is going to meet again. Now, Congress is in a recess right at the moment, and generally speaking, you cannot get a member of Congress back to Washington, D.C. during a recess. But this committee is here. They're present. They're going to continue hearing evidence that they say is new, and a witness, at least one, that we have not heard from before. And there seems to be a reason they feel this is urgent enough to change their schedule and to have a special meeting of the committee. We don't know who the witness is yet. We don't know what the subject of the evidence is. But we do know that they had not planned any more public sessions until after July 11th. So they're accelerating this timetable by more than 2 weeks, and they are not telling us yet what is so urgent about having this hearing tomorrow. So as you can imagine, there's a great deal of suspense and interest in just what we're going to learn.
And speculation that you won't join, Ron.
Just speculation that I would not dare to join, although there is some suspicion it may have to do with some of the videotape from a BBC filmmaker who had considerable access to the Trump family leading up to the election and after the election leading up to the January 6th attack. That is speculation. We don't know. That's the evidence in question.
We've talked about the gun safety legislation that had been the subject of some debates, and it has now been passed.
Indeed. That we passed the legislation that made it a little more difficult for at least a few people to get a certain kind of gun. But at the same time, that same Supreme Court was issuing a decision last week that makes it more difficult for the states to regulate concealed weapons, carrying small handguns that have no real purpose in hunting, that are really only used for people who want to use them against other people. So that's discouraging to people who thought perhaps we would start moving in more of a gun safety direction after the recent massacres in New York State and in Texas.
Thank you. Ron Elving is Senior Editor and Correspondent, Washington Desk for NPR News.